Continuing Helen Wright's book, Humanity's Divinity.
When the disciples saw their master's true identity in Bible prophecy, they were no longer disloyal. They were able to go forth and overcome great obstacles in his name. The same will be true of all who spiritually see Mrs. Eddy's place in Bible prophecy. They will become aware of their sovereign power to think and act rightly, knowing their mind is the infinite good called God. Christian scientists are fishers of men, Mrs. Eddy says. The Bible is our sea-beaten rock. It guides the fishermen. It stands the storm. It engages the attention and enriches the being, the affections of all men. Chapter 21. A Prophet Among Us. You find me in my writings. It is as important to know who Mary Baker Eddy is as it is to know what she taught. All Christian scientists will become aware that Mary Baker Eddy represented the woman of the Apocalypse and fulfilled scriptural prophecy just as the Virgin Mary and Christ Jesus fulfilled biblical prophecy. Mrs. Eddy herself made this clear numerous times in her writings. For instance, in Science and Health on page 118, she states, "Did not this parable point a moral with a prophecy, foretelling the second appearing in the flesh of the Christ truth, hidden in sacred secrecy from the visible world?" The glossary's first verse of her inspired Christ and Christmas, her last book, makes it clear that both she and Jesus are the root and offspring of David. Mrs. Eddy said, "You find me in my writings," but also, "My writings are not all you know of me." Her writings inform us she knew she represented the woman of the Apocalypse. Mrs. Eddy admonished us, "Relinquish your human concept of me or of anyone and find the divine, and you have gained the right one, and never until then." The divine concept is mind's own concept of itself, its full idea or manifestation, the Christ or generic man which Mrs. Eddy revealed. Only by the Christ consciousness which beholds infinite good could she bring it forth. This is what we find in her writings. We also find her in scriptural prophecy. We know, and Mrs. Eddy knew, that we also find her prophesied many times in the Scriptures. Therefore, she said, "My writings are not all you know of me." Mrs. Eddy, from the Mount of Vision, beheld the woman as symbolizing generic man, the spiritual idea of God, the full representation of mind. St. John, in his Revelation, states, "I will give power unto my two witnesses." To her devoted students, the Millers, she wrote, "Today, it is a marvel to me that God chose me for this mission, and that my life work was the theme of ancient prophecy, and I the scribe of his infinite way of salvation." The loyal students who lived with Mrs. Eddy realized how clearly she recognized her position as prophesied by St. John, the Revelator. Lulu Blackman states, "Throughout the class, Mrs. Eddy effaced the sense of her personality apart from God so plainly that she thought, spoke, and acted from the standpoint of her oneness with the Father." Another student, Mrs. Jenny E. Sawyer, states, "There was a discernible, an inward light or reflection of thought that shone through her countenance. One felt drawn to a better life just from being in her presence." Another student wrote, "At all times, she seemed conscious of a wisdom not her own." Mrs. Eddy, like Jesus, could say, "The word which you hear is not mine, but the Father's which sent me." Emma C. Chipman had looked forward to hearing Mrs. Eddy speak, and had pictured her in looks and manner perhaps like Julia Ward Howe and Mary Livermore, whom she had heard lecture. Quote, "Instead," she says, "there was this great contrast. One almost lost sight of Mrs. Eddy's personality in drinking in her words. The other two had big personalities, but Mrs. Eddy was like a transparency for God to shine through. On every visit, Miss Shipman experienced, quote, the feeling of the greatness of the truth which Mrs. Eddy taught, and the self-effacement of the teacher, unquote. Mrs. Eddy knew that she, like Jesus, was the root and offspring of David, the bright and morning star, wherein God's motherhood is never separated from God's fatherhood. To fulfill this prophecy, Mrs. Eddy had to get Mary out of the way and speak from the standpoint of the Christ. Miss Mary Brookins states that in the normal class of 1888, quote, was a loosening of the earth ties and a gleam of heaven harmony such as I had never imagined possible. One day, she said, Mrs. Eddy had been lifting the veil of matter so we almost felt there was none, when a student impulsively leaned forward and asked, but Mrs. Eddy, if we had such a realization as that, wouldn't the patient disappear? Reassuringly, with enormous directness and winning grace, Mrs. Eddy laughed. Don't worry, my dear. When you get such a realization as you're thinking of, it will be you who will disappear, not the patient. Mrs. Eddy states, Agassiz, whose eyes were veiled by material education, through his microscope saw the sun in an egg at a point of so-called embryonic life. Although Mrs. Eddy obviously had great respect for Agassiz, mentioning him 6 times in Science and Health, she knew that even through a microscope he could not see what was really there. Life, the life that is God, the only life there is not embryonic. Then she explains, because of his more spiritual vision, St. John, the metaphysical heavyweight, saw an angel standing in the sun. St. John saw what the apocalyptic woman would reveal, namely, what we really are as one with infinite good. We are told that the woman in the apocalypse is the woman who brought forth a man-child to rule all nations, all states of thought, which in essence means finding the kingdom of heaven within our own consciousness. Here we learn definitely that the woman who brought forth the man-child, alias Science and Health, the second coming of the Christ, is the woman of the apocalypse, or Mary Baker Eddy. It was through her beautiful spiritual teachings that Mrs. Eddy brought forth the man-child, your true identity. By symbolically giving birth to the man-child, your true identity, the understanding of your at-one-ment with infinite good, she made the belief in evil obsolete. Each one of us is that woman symbolically giving birth to the understanding that evil is unreal, merely a state of being hypnotized. Mrs. Eddy's definition of God is the definition of what we are. It is also what is meant by the man-child she brought forth. The oneness of infinite good understood brings out its own embodiment. Every individual is destined to experience the man-child, Mrs. Eddy's 7 synonyms for God as his own divine being. This is why Mary Baker Eddy, conceiving this idea of God, could fulfill Jesus' prophecy to St. John in Revelation that the woman would bring forth a man-child. She showed us how we too will bring forth this man-child, give birth to understanding. Mrs. Eddy's man-child is Science and Health, which unveils and reveals our true identity. We will all give birth to that which we already are. The man-child will rule. The man-child Mrs. Eddy brought forth was her own divine thought which wrote Science and Health, which in turn revealed our true identity as generic man, as Christ science, the divine science that is going to rule. So what is it that is going to rule? Divine science, your real and only mind, that is your principle, will rule. The woman's sacred discovery, her holy revelation, and the founding of it in human consciousness is what will rule, and is ruling now in reality. This immaculate idea, divine science, which, according to Jesus' revelation in St. John, will be represented last by woman, will rule even though the serpent pursues it with hatred. The spiritual idea presented by the woman will burn up the chaff of error with a fervent heat of truth and love, melting and purifying even the gold of human character. The final revelation. As Copernicus correctly mapped out the stellar system, so Mary Baker Eddy correctly explored and mapped out the spiritual realm, which is dissolving the historical concept of man. So revolutionary is Mrs. Eddy's teaching of the way Jesus marked out that a complete mutation is necessary to handle a new spiritual consciousness this second coming of the Christ gives us. The final revelation which she brought is without father, without mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like unto the Son of God. In a way, it is like 2 + 2 = 4. It has always been. Nothing can touch it or end its life. The revelation is complete. It is our duty to walk in it. Christian Science, understood, will bring forth a new kind of man. In a statement to the Associated Press, Mrs. Eddy said, "What remains to lead on the centuries and reveal my successor is man in the image and likeness of the Father, Mother, God. Man, the generic term for mankind." Unquote. Through her revelation, sooner or later the whole human race will learn that in proportion as the spotless selfhood of the infinite good called God is understood, human nature will be renovated, and man will receive a higher selfhood derived from God, and the redemption of mortals from sin, sickness, and death will be established on everlasting foundations. Chapter 22, The Great Revelation. At the Threshold of Infinity, 1846-1866. In 1866, Mary Baker Eddy stood at the threshold of infinity, looking out on infinite good. She viewed this universe, whose divine principle is love, not as a distant possibility, but as the only reality of being. In the 130 years since that momentous year, Christian Science has been steadily educating mankind how to rise above all material sensuousness into spiritual consciousness, how to rise above being fooled by hypnotic pictures of matter. Christian Science is the Christ, coming the second time through the spiritualized consciousness of Mary Baker Eddy. It has come to rid the world of its present and eons-long load of despair and misery, of its fear and dread that it is sitting on death row. Mrs. Eddy's 1846-66 search. Mrs. Eddy writes, "The discovery came to pass in this way. During 20 years prior to my discovery, I had been trying to trace all physical effects to a mental cause, and in the latter part of 1866, I gained the scientific certainty that all causation was mind." The work she was doing in 1846, 20 years before the great revelation came, of trying to trace all physical effects to a mental cause, indeed the work she'd been doing all her life, was preparing her to launch out into the deep, as Jesus commanded Peter to do. When tempestuous waters confronted her 20 years later, her ark of understanding would be ready to sail. The work Mrs. Eddy was doing in 1846 prepared her for the daring voyage that would begin in 1866 and take her into a new world of demonstrable celestial thought where only Jesus had been before. As the limitations of matter lifted, ever more wonders appeared. There is always a spiritual cause behind those lower things. Everything divinely real is already here. God's work is done. The principles of every invention have always existed. It only waited for a Samuel F.B. Morse, a Marconi, a Thomas A. Edison, the Wright brothers, or an Einstein to reveal the principles governing these ideas. What we are aware of is just a matter of consciousness. Mrs. Eddy knew that she of herself could not have originated such a book as Science and Health. She had to get Mary out of the way. She, like Jesus, could say, "I received not testimony from man." And like Peter and John, as they stood before the tribunal with the man they had healed at the gate of the temple, at the gate of their own thought, humbly stating, "We cannot but speak the things we have seen and heard." So it was with Mrs. Eddy. She said she had to study the book herself in order to understand it. When she came to writing it each day, she did not know what to write until she picked up her pen. "It was simply divine mind expressing itself," she said. "God wrote the textbook. I only held the pen." The leaven of spirit in that writing which God dictated is changing the whole of mortal thought, as yeast changes the chemical properties of meal. Mrs. Eddy once stated, "As Mary Baker Eddy, I am the weakest of mortals. But as the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, I am the bone and sinew of the world." We too become the bone and sinew of the world in proportion to our spiritual understanding and our grasp of reality. Remember, Jesus also said, "Of mine own self, I can do nothing." Chapter 23, The Little Book in the Angel's Hand. First edition gives highest revelations. Why is Mrs. Eddy's first edition regarded as the highest? It must be remembered that woman is a descending idea. Mrs. Eddy's writings reveal the bride, the city four square, that descends from heaven. Jesus, in man's ascending role, had taken his work to the seventh rung, or the seventh day of creation, and it was at this holy height that woman had to start to bring the Christ message down to where beleaguered humanity could grasp the lowest rung of the ladder and begin the heavenly climb. It is therefore natural that in the first edition of Science and Health, because Mrs. Eddy had to start in heaven where Jesus left off, her statements would be high and in the main absolute, like her statement to her first classes, "You, my students, are God." Even a century later, how few accept this instruction. Jesus' understanding and vision were so high that perhaps only St. John understood his teaching, at least sufficiently to receive Jesus' revelation to him on the Isle of Patmos. Even 2,000 years later, Mrs. Eddy spoke of the present crude hour, indicating there still was little receptivity to spiritual teaching. Mrs. Eddy soon learned that while man's greatest height had to be woman's divine starting point, she must bring the Christ message down to where it could be understood by humanity in a systematized way. She saw that to teach, you must start where people are. Spiritual ideas unfold as we, the readers, advance. This is why the first edition is very different from later ones. Why did Mrs. Eddy revise Science and Health? The question is often asked, why did Mrs. Eddy revise Science and Health? Mrs. Eddy states that her first edition contains the complete statement of Christian Science. Why then did she continually revise it? Her revisions were not metaphysical changes, but accommodations to the thought of the times in which she was writing. Remember, Mary Baker Eddy began where Jesus left off. Jesus foretold she would bring the Comforter that mankind was not ready for 2,000 years ago. Mr. Carpenter, who for a year lived in Mrs. Eddy's home and was her secretary, states, "Mrs. Eddy revised Science and Health not because there was anything untrue about the first edition, but because it did not present Christian Science in a form sufficiently adapted to the needs of the world." No one will ever know the spiritual thought and effort Mrs. Eddy expended in order to step down and accommodate revelation as it came to her, so that it could be comprehended by the beginner. In fact, she once remarked that she had brought science and health, or Christian Science, down just as far as she could without losing it. Unquote. William D. McCracken was Mrs. Eddy's proofreader for the final edition. In his book, Mary Baker Eddy and Her Book, he writes, "Subsequent editions of Science and Health never changed the teaching of the first edition, but they did seek to adjust its radical statements to human comprehension. They used more of the wisdom of the serpent, understood as an adroit idea, and less of the challenge of the lion's roar." After the first edition, Mrs. Eddy tried to see that everything that went into subsequent editions had been found demonstrable. And, seeing how unready and unprepared people were for this great divine truth, she began hiding it in the textbook. Even 40 years later, after finishing Science and Health in 1910, she told Laura Sargent, as recorded in Volume 2 of Lyda Fitzpatrick's Association Addresses, quote, "There, Laura, I have hidden it and hidden it and hidden it, and if I hide it any more, they will never find it." Unquote. Find what? Find what she told the pupils in her first class, namely, "You, my students, are God." God's law is in three words. Mrs. Eddy said God's law is in three words, "I am all." But to explain these three words, she wrote the textbook, and all that is contained in prose works. Besides personally teaching thousands of students and writing thousands of letters to students explaining the meaning of those three words, "I am all." Think of the immense outpouring of divine energy this took. Regarding 4,000 students taught in her college. As students gathered around her, she eventually established a college to allow her message to reach greater numbers of people. In the preface of Science and Health, she states that during 7 years, over 4,000 students were taught by her in this college. Occasionally, one hears of a student questioning this statement, unaware of the history of the Christian Science movement at that point in time. What drew the people? The throngs may not have been well-educated, but they obviously possessed that penetrating perception infinite good seems to give to the simple and the humble. They recognized in Mrs. Eddy's teaching an astonishing power that fascinated and lured them. They felt instinctively that her teaching had the answer to their problems, needs, and fears. During those 7 years, while Mrs. Eddy taught over 4,000 students, she carried on many other activities, showing her amazing spiritual power. Only because of what she was, namely the fulfillment of the prophesied woman of the apocalypse, could she accomplish such a Herculean task. How did she assess her ability to do all this, to fulfill her God-appointed mission in spite of fearful opposition? She said she could do it because I got Mary out of the way. She listened only for God's voice, then hastened to obey God's direction. Chapter 24. Teaching and Healing Spread Christian Science. Mrs. Eddy patiently persisted. When Science and Health was first published, it was forced to run the gauntlet of scorn and ridicule. In the storm of misunderstanding and criticism heaped on it, in the stress of ingratitude and betrayal, Mrs. Eddy was tried as by fire. At times, she was all but overwhelmed by the waters of malice, envy, and hate. Beset by poverty, homelessness, and loneliness, she bravely, unflinchingly pressed on. Like Jesus, Mrs. Eddy resolutely, patiently persisted in her work on earth to bring the second coming of the Christ and fulfill Jesus' promise of the Comforter. She knew the great divine revelation had come to her directly from God, and that she was fulfilling the scriptural prophecy concerning the woman that would bring forth the man-child, your true identity, as it is unfolded in Science and Health. The textbook is the man-child that we have always been one with, as we will realize when the veil or hypnotism is lifted. Divine love is forcing us all to purify our thought by turning away from material sense and looking toward the imperishable things of spirit. Mrs. Eddy's perseverance prepared the way so that we here and now can become aware that we are the presence of God, that we actually are God in action. But all through her 44 years of discovery and revelation, ingratitude and falsehood stalked her every forward move. When she said, "The disciples and prophets thrust disputed points on minds unprepared, this cost them their lives and the world's temporary esteem," she was speaking from hard, cruel experience. She had learned the withering effect of words spoken too soon and the wisdom of silence on the subject of who she was. Misjudgment, the sharp return of evil for good, was her almost daily portion. It must have seemed to her that no good deed goes unpunished. The sharpest blow was the way some of her early students, to whom she had revealed unrestrained the power of the mind to heal, perverted that power. These students, being too materially minded, too unprepared to comprehend her instruction, used the power of the mind to harm her and her loyal students. However, the world's unrelenting cruelty toward Mrs. Eddy was also a blessing in disguise. It wrought out for her the law of loving her enemies. It also hastened the uncovering of evil as unreal. For the first time in human history, mortals were taught that by knowing the unreality of evil, of sin, disease, and death, they could now demonstrate the allness of infinite good in their own lives and have heaven right here on earth. How to handle evil not at first clear. In a poem, Mrs. Eddy writes, "Let there be light, and there was light. What chased the clouds away? The light is omnipresent forever. Only clouds hide it. When we, the spiritual man, begin to correct our mistakes, when the hypnotism, the wrong viewpoint that has blinded us has been corrected, the light is seen to be omnipresent." In the great revelation that came to her in 1866, it was made clear that infinite good was the only reality. But how to explain the nothingness of evil and error was not at first clear, and her method of handling evil evolved slowly. At first, Mrs. Eddy vigorously fought what looked like evil and error. But her final statements on evil urge us to see that the unity between man and the infinite good we call God has never been interrupted. This unity remains forever the reality. Instructions on handling evil. One of Mrs. Eddy's last instructions to us on handling evil is found on page 210 of Miscellany. Quote, "Beloved Christian Scientists, here read your own name, beloved Bill, beloved Mary. Feel how Mrs. Eddy loves you. Know that she is speaking directly to you. Keep your mind so filled with truth and love that sin, disease, and death cannot enter." Do we do this? Do we pay attention to this most important instruction? Do we stand porter at the door of thought? How faithfully do we perform our office as porter? How faithful are we about admitting only such conclusions as we wish realized in bodily results? If infinite good is admitted to be the only mind and life, there ceases to be any opportunity for sin and death. It is plain that nothing can be added to a mind already full. Why? In mathematics, for instance, once you have thoroughly learned that 2 times 2 is 4, or any other calculation, your mind is full of that, and nothing can persuade you that 2 times 2 is 5 or 6. This is how Jesus and his disciples, and Mrs. Eddy and her students did their seemingly miraculous healing. Good thoughts, God's thoughts, truth, are an impervious armor. Clad therewith, you are completely shielded from the attacks of error of every sort. It's the right understanding of God, of the infinite good that is our own mind, that will shield us from the attacks of error of every sort. Christian Science and the senses are at war. It is a revolutionary struggle, we read in miscellaneous writings. Mortals do not attain the realization of their present divinity without a mighty effort. There will be many battles and the constant crossing of swords with the temptation to believe the testimony of the five physical senses. We will prosper in proportion to the spirit of love that nerves the endeavor to forsake error of every kind. Great causes involve conflict and persecution. As the pioneer of Christian Science, Mrs. Eddy, trusting in truth and having no other trusts, stood absolutely alone in this conflict, this world-imposed struggle. Energetically, vigorously, she smote error with the sword of truth. It was this aloneness with the reality of things that enabled her to experience infinite progression as concrete being, when she discovered new truths about her own revelation right up to her final year. The mighty, unparalleled challenge. The mighty, unparalleled challenge that faced Mrs. Eddy was how to find ways to share her revelation with the world. It required awakening mortals to the opposite of their deepest convictions, the unsealing of the world's frozen resistance to truth, the melting of the hardened concepts of the carnal mind's unbelief and skepticism, in order to reveal the man of infinite goods creating. She must communicate totally new spiritual truths in a language formed chiefly, primarily, to serve mankind's material needs and wants. Healing was the answer. Healing was the smallest part of Christian Science, but in this hour of millennial anticipation and awakening, it would be the bugle call to thought and action. Healing was what people needed and wanted. Therefore, healing would be the bugle call. Mary Baker Eddy's advent on earth, her God-appointed mission to bring the scripturally prophesied second coming of the Christ, was ushered in with her performance of wonderful healings, only a few of which have been recorded. Fortunately, some, including a few early ones, are buried in the archives of the Mother Church. For example, one night while living at No. 8 Broad Street, Mrs. Eddy had supper with her tenants and met a Mrs. Godfrey who was visiting them. Mrs. Godfrey had a badly damaged finger that had become so swollen the doctor said she might lose her arm if she did not have the finger amputated. At one point, Mrs. Eddy reached over and touched Mrs. Godfrey's hand, asking what was wrong with her finger. Then the conversation turned to other things. That night, Mrs. Godfrey slept peacefully. When she awoke in the morning, her finger was almost normal. Years later, her daughter described how her mother gave a little scream, jumped out of bed, and ran into the next room in her nightgown, calling to her nephew, "William, look at my hand." The nephew's laconic response was, "Guess Mrs. Glover has been trying her works on it." Within a few days, the healing was complete. Later, there was another healing for the Godfreys. Little Mary Godfrey had suffered all through childhood from alarming attacks of membranous croup. On the occasion of the next severe attack, Mrs. Godfrey wrapped Mary in a blanket and set off for Lynn in a blinding snowstorm, quote, for healing, unquote. Arriving at 8 Broad Street, the two Godfreys were met at the door by Mrs. Glover, who took in the situation at a glance. Cheerfully, she told the little girl to run upstairs to the Nash's apartment and play. That was the end of the trouble. An instant certainty had communicated itself to both mother and daughter, and before the latter had even reached the next floor, she was healed. This is from a Mary Godfrey reminiscence. More reminiscences.